Here at In My Own Words, we are returning from what I'm going to create as an annual spring break for the next few seasons. And boy, was this a doozy. It's been a long time since I've released an episode, and this is going to be one behemoth of an episode because I'm going to combine what I had originally planned on having be two smaller episodes and then one list episode. I'm saving my next full film review to do a compare and contrast of something I think you'll like. But more importantly, let's get to why this was delayed and my thoughts about what on earth happened these past few months. You see, in early March, I released the previous episode of In My Own Words, and it was about Enemy and the Double. Ironically enough, I had been trying to do an episode of those movies for quite some time. Since fall of last year, I had been working on the script and how to piece it all together and some of the research. And I had never really completed it or gotten that done. It became this behemoth to me. A great comparison of that episode would be the film Synecdoche, New York, which, though is interesting from a filmmaking perspective, does not live up to a lot of the artistic hype. Now, it's a fantastic movie and technically one of the best, and the story is phenomenal, and maybe I'll talk about it more in depth. The problem is, it's a little bloated, and it's a little self-gratifying. It feels like the director really wanted to be perceived as a big artist, and that's how that movie feels. Now, back to the topic at hand. Double the Doubles times two was a major victory for me because though I completed it later than I had anticipated, I had finally finished two of my favorite movies in one podcast. The next day, the world started to unravel, and it seemed in the following weeks after that episode's release, a pandemic and panic swept over this entire country. My work schedule, yes, I'll admit I do have a side job besides this podcast, a little gig, changed exponentially. It seemed the moment I had my feet beneath me and a plan of what I was doing and a good schedule, and which would allow me to record the next episode, it would change. And I think as a metaphor, as this bizarre environment can be, it showed me how we all are having to adapt very quickly. The entire world is having to adapt very quickly against, it seems, assault on all sides. It seems we're fearful of a genuinely deadly disease that is out there and is ravishing people all across the world. We're also dealing with the economic and familial outfalls of the stay-at-home orders. There seems to be a very short fuse above everyone's head these days, and it doesn't take much to offend people. I never thought I would live to see a day where people were in line for food and simultaneously hearing the phrase, "I want to go back to work," would be deemed offensive. It seems that the old habits of bringing your own to-go cup or bringing your own reusable bag have now become a faux pas, and the days of a masked figure being scary have reversed roles. It's a new world, and even if, best case scenario, we can return relatively close to where we were pre-coronavirus, and maybe we just have a heightened sense of cleanliness. There's a miracle pill, and everything just snaps back to how it should be. Even in that best case, this is going to be in everyone's memories for the rest of their lives. An entire generation of Americans are growing up not having a senior prom or graduation ceremony. A similar situation is that a generation of well-to-do Americans have lost their jobs and are, for the first time in their lives, scared of losing everything. Some Americans said goodbye to their parents for the last time a few weeks ago. And due to regulation, family members are unable to visit each other as they're in the hospital. Now, I know this is a entertainment and review podcast, and we generally keep our eyes on what is fictitious and artistic in nature. But I feel that it is important to spend a little time here discussing what has actually happened and how, for the next 70, 80, 300 years, entertainment will grow out of this catastrophe. Just this last year, HBO released a miniseries about Chernobyl, which I would love to discuss. To this day, there is a fascination with the tragedy and the mishandling of the fallout at the Chernobyl power plants. It seems that wherever you turn today, people's senses and defenses are heightened. Whatever you declare, if you say you want to stay healthy, it's offensive. If you say you wish to purchase food, it's offensive. Just me, I went to the store and I purchased some spaghetti. I double-checked, made sure there was plenty of it, took the boxes I needed. I left the store with little more than spaghetti noodles, of which, before I finish, I want to remind you, this store had plenty of spaghetti noodles. Now, I know this can get confusing, so I'm just going to call this store. I'm going to make it up. I'm just going to pull a name out of the air. Let's just say Publix. Now, I'm not saying that's where this was. I'm just making it up. Let's just call this fictitious store Publix. And I attempted to check out at this Publix and was yelled at by management for daring to purchase too much spaghetti. And I understand, I really do, that there were runs on the store in this early stages, and there are products still we might not see on shelves for a very long time. Yet every time I have gone to a grocery store since then, there have been copious amounts of spaghetti noodles. In reality, it wasn't a big deal. I simply had violated a rule I was not aware of. Every member of that conflict was defensive. We all were hyper aware of every detail of every person's movement. But instead of focusing on that which we cannot control, it has helped all Americans to instead focus on that which we can. You see, there are stories all over of overcoming, businesses adapting, families changing their dynamics, parents becoming teachers, and teachers, well, having to parent and teacher simultaneously and make it seamless. There are nurses going into the front lines of all of this, risking their lives, and some of them have died. There are grandparents in retirement homes being ravished by this virus, and there are families in the Midwest who are having to kill their livestock because there's no one buying it. Oil prices have dropped to the point where companies will pay you to grab a barrel of crude oil. And the stock market seems to swing wildly every day. There's a lot of good and a lot of bad happening right now. But we will not end here. There's an old expression, and I think it applies to all of this. When you're going through hell, keep going. Because if you stop, where are you? And that helped me realize not only to find alternative ways of living my life and trying to find the simple joys that really are going to be the only way to help me emotionally get through all of this. I also decided that I needed to get back to this studio. I needed to return. It might be silly. It might be me sitting in a room by myself talking about two Netflix original animes and a list that someone else compiled, and I didn't really have any work. Didn't take any part of that. It just happened. So why was it so important for me to return here? I think possibly it's because it seemed normal. And instead of having my life be riddled with chaos, I wanted to return to what was familiar. And I love getting to talk to you every day. I love getting to sit in this studio and talk to an audience miles away about something that I enjoy. Maybe that's not much. That's not certainly going to put bread on the table or return jobs or the economy to where it should be. But maybe for a brief moment, someone might get a little bit of entertainment value out of this. It'll maybe distract somebody from what's going on outside. Because after all, you can't really go outside right now. You're stuck here. And while you're stuck here, I'll do my best to keep you knowledgeable and understand all of those strange oddities of this media climate. So I have changed a lot of my plans for the rest of this season, but don't worry, I'll get them all in. Now, I would like to introduce you to something I'm quite passionate about. That's right. I have remade the beloved, in my own words, theme song. I felt that this new world deserved a new musical backing. And in doing so, I got just a taste of what this new world could be. You see, it was small, simple, relatively easy to do, but I realized that we're not going to be defeated. You see, when you go through hell, keep going. And that's what we've always done. That's what this country was built on. We are not stuck here. It might feel like it when you're seeing the same four walls every damn day, but I promise we're getting through this. And it won't take as long as you think. Soon, we'll see a world where people are out and about. Maybe we're not shaking hands. Maybe we're wearing fun masks. Maybe we'll get to wear a mask to the movie theater. What a strange thing to think about. But when this ends, and it will end, we will all be made stronger from it. We will all be closer, and we will have triumphed over something nearly impenetrable. And I'll be here talk about the movies. So I'm Wes, and this is In My Own Words. That is right. Welcome back. I'm glad I got to do that introduction. And I think I've said all I need to say. So let's dive in. I have two shows that I watch. Now, I watched a plethora of shows, and I'll talk about that in the coming days. But I have one show that I watched, which was a lot of fun. You see, it has become a bit of a cult classic in my household. And that is The Simple Cells at Work. Based on a manga in Japan, this anime follows cells in the human body. Primarily, it follows a red blood cell who has just graduated from, I think, the bone marrow. You see, you'd have to ask my wife, who works in healthcare, what all of this means, and I'm not going to be able to recite everything because I'm not smart enough. And I apologize. My mastery is in speech and broadcasting. I don't know very much about the human body, and my wife knows a lot more, so we complement each other. But anyway, the show follows a young red blood cell who has just graduated, but unfortunately has a bad habit of not knowing directions. She is clueless, and that's right. The red blood cell is personified as a young lady. All the red blood cells wear little red caps and jean jackets, and they're very pleasant. They transport oxygen and nutrients throughout the body. The body is designed as a city, and they walk around the city. They go to apartment complexes with cells, which seem to be the common folk who are plain people with white t-shirts that read cell. They deliver food to them. The boxes all say O2 on them, but inside it's sandwiches and drinks. And her main counterpart is the white blood cell, who is colorless, utterly white. And just, I mean, sheet of paper white, not the race. He is completely white, clothes, hat, everything, and fights off the germs, viruses, and bacteria. He is very violent, and it's one of the fun parts of the show is he is aggressive and violent, and he has a knife, and he rips the germs apart piece by piece, but is overall relatively pleasant. And he and her tend to run into each other and become friends over the course of the show. And it's quite delightful. It is an easy watch, and it's a lot of fun. I'm going to tell you right now, it is a blast to watch Cells at Work. Because you see such enjoyment in the creation of the show. You can tell that there was a lot of thought put into how the germs looked, how they acted, and the characters. You have T cells, you have the, I guess they're natural T cells, and then the fighter T cells, you have platelets, and the platelets are like children running around, but there are the construction crew, and the T cells are like a military. You have macrophage, which is a type of very aggressive white blood cell, which is slow to respond. I know that because of this show. You see, even someone who knows very little about the human body learns from this show. And that's what you will notice after watching. You'll walk away educated and entertained. And that's rarity. You see, the show is not designed to be a parody or some kind of ultra-adult take on things we all know. In fact, it's, I think, just rated TV-14, mainly just for violence. There's nothing objectionable in the show. There are some very cool episodes, particularly the influenza episode is very cool. And the cancer episode was phenomenal. And it shows how this stuff happens, but it turns it into a metaphor in which these diseases and your bodily processes are turned into characters and scenarios. And you learn so much. The funniest episode that me and my wife enjoyed watching, under quarantine of course, was the allergy episode. Quick aside, I was incredibly sick in late March, early April, to the point where it was difficult to breathe. I found myself struggling to even get air in my body. You know what I had? I had allergies. The pollen. It was the trees outside made me sick. And go figure that in this world, in this climate, with everything going on, I had allergies. But that's just me. You see, it seems when nothing is going on, I'll get the most bizarre condition. I'll be like a Dr. House episode. But when everything's going on, it's the trees. The trees kill me. And that's how I'm going to die. It's probably allergy attack from the trees. But returning to the show, Cells at Work is a treat that everyone can enjoy. You would be hard-pressed to find a human who would not enjoy Cells at Work. It is some of the most fun that my wife and I had watching a TV show. That is, of course, beside a few shows. I mean, a handful of shows were as much fun as Cells at Work. There was one episode, in fact, where the body, I guess, the city, got an abrasion. And a huge hole appears. It is like a terrorist attack. And you have red blood cells getting sucked out of this hole, and then a horde of germs come in. The show proceeds to enact its trademark narration with each germ. You see, the germ will show up, it will freeze frame, and a narrator will tell you the properties of this germ, which is how I learned so much about such little things. You see, this narration will tell you this is Staphylococcus. It can generally perform this. It exists outside of the skin, but can cause a harmful infection when it is in the skin, or something like that. You see, I don't remember the whole show because it's a lot to learn. But if you are in a human biology course and you're learning about diseases and bodily functions, well, you should probably watch this. There is even an episode which features little to no germ activity, but the red blood cell decides that she and she alone will navigate the entire circulatory system. She will complete her first ever trip around the body, which is a big deal because she's terrible at directions. And what was fun about this episode was that white blood cell saw this was going on and decided, okay, you've got it, told her she had it. And then the entire rest of the show, he is behind the scenes helping her get there. If she drops something, he finds it. If a germ shows up, he'll kill the germ. And it's hilarious because he's with her his whole day, exhausted. And she shows up not knowing anything happened and finishes one whole day of work. At the end of her shift, she leaves and sees white blood cell and proceeds to tell him all about her day. And it was fun, kind of sweet, little cheesy. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of cheese in this show, but it's just a fun watch. And it's the kind of thing, as you watch it, if you're like me, you'll scratch your head and just question why this idea came to anybody. Why did anyone think, you know what needs an anime? White blood cells. It is bizarre. I don't understand who thought this would be cool, but you know, they did, and it was pretty cool. It was fun. And it was characters that you enjoyed seeing. It was predictable at times, and often I felt like they could have done more with the concept than they did, and perhaps there will be a season two. I know on YouTube, an independent creator is adapting the more adult version. It's called Cells at Work, Code Black, and it is about more adult situations, more adult handling, because Cells at Work on Netflix does seem to cater to a younger audience. That doesn't mean that it's talking down to you. In fact, it's a very intelligent show, and it's relatively well written. But the YouTube series, which I have not watched, so I cannot comment on, seems to be more aggressive, most likely more violence, harsher language, that sort of thing. But I'll give it a watch if it's made by a similar company that can adapt the fun aspects of the show simply in a more gritty manner. With all of that said, I will admit that I did not rewatch it. It's not the kind of show that I was just dying to rewatch. It seemed to be a show where you could get one really good watch, and that would about wrap you up. You'd be good. And I'd say that's one of the downsides, is I haven't been chomping at the bit to see it again. Whereas recently my wife and I, speaking of rewatching an anime, my wife and I started watching My Hero Academia back at the first episode, and it was just as fun as the first time. That's the sign of a good show, is you want to see it again. I can tell you I've watched Breaking Bad 4 times. And when I started watching El Camino, which I will be talking about later this year, it was like reliving it all over again. Especially that story so far, the previously where it summarized all of Breaking Bad right at the beginning. Oh man, that was fun to watch. And that's a show you can keep watching again and again. And it's some shows are like that, some shows aren't. I would say in the world of television, that is definitely Westworld's Achilles heel. You see, I love Westworld. The concept, the creation, the storyline. It is amazing. And I will be talking about that show, especially since season 3 is going on right now. But unfortunately, Westworld has little to no rewatchability. You see, it is a behemoth of a show, and each season is its own movie almost, and it's a lot to keep track of, so that when you complete a season or you're halfway through season 3, you don't necessarily want to go back and start at episode 1 again, because the way this show breadcrumbs you, it's tedious sometimes. When you know the answer, that is. When you don't know the answer, it's a fun journey. But when you know the answer, you're, oh my gosh. Now let's ground back. Let's head back down to Cells at Work. Overall, I would say that this show is an awesome show to watch. I would highly recommend this show. Let's do The Good, Bad, and Ugly. The Good. Pleasure to watch, easy to follow, well-made, passable artwork. I wouldn't say it's the most amazing artwork, but it's passable. The bad would be no rewatchability, and, well, I'll go back to the animation. There's some parts of the show that really could have been done better, I think, visually. And I feel like it wouldn't have taken that much more effort. I think some of the characters could have had a little bit of uniqueness to them. Though I understand that in the world of the show, there are billions of every character. So it's difficult. But some of the character development is stunted. In fact, the entire show is a big tease at White Blood Cell and Red Blood Cell having a romantic relationship. They seem to, but it's never really fulfilled. And if you're really into character development and story arcs, this show can kind of get irritating. Each episode is its own thing. And it can, I wouldn't say great, but it can weigh the show down. The ugly would have to be, for this one, I'll say the most disturbing, would have to be the cancer episode. And it's handled very well, because I know it's a cartoon about cancer, and that is a difficult line to walk, but it's done very well. And cancer is shown as this mutated cell that touches things, and his body sort of adapts onto what he touches, and he becomes monstrous. And it is awesome. It is done in a slow, insidious manner where at first, everything seems fine in the human body. And then out of nowhere, it seems that this huge amount of the body is cancerous. And it's attempting to spread to the blood. And you build to this climactic battle where all of the defense cells, all the types of white cells and T cells are combating this cancer because it's grown so powerful and it's about to hit the bloodstream. And it's done very well, and it's cool, but boy, he looks gross at some parts. And that'll do it for Cells at Work. Now, stick around after this quick little word from our sponsor. We're going to talk about Beastars. Ugh. Let's talk about Beastars on Netflix. A real quick summary would be that it follows high school students who are animals. And what I learned quickly upon beginning this show is that these are not normal animals, you see. These are something that the internet calls furries. And if you want an introduction to why people find furries uncomfortable, well, this is a great show to start with. I will have some positives to say about this show, but I'm not going to start with them, because this show did not start with many positives in my mind. It is based on a manga, of course, so there is a more complete story, and as it turns out, from the research that I did, the original story was a lot more coherent with the message. See, there are the predators, and there are the prey. There are animals that are aggressive, known as the carnivores. And then there are the herbivores, or the prey. You might be thinking, wait a minute, Wes. We've seen this before. We watched Zootopia. We watched Zootopia. Disney talked about this plot. Well, guess what, everybody? It's that plot, but worse. Zootopia had a real understanding of racial tension and understood how a society might perceive one another differently based on certain racial components, certain involuntary makeup that a person may have. Disney handled it very well and created an engaging, fun, and timeless story with Zootopia. Beastars, I'm not talking about the original story, I am now talking strictly about the anime on Netflix, is handled with a crude abruptness and brash disdain for culture and class, and is a complete affront to storytelling. And I'll tell you why I have such harsh opinions about this show. Because every episode is a different genre. And I don't mean in the fun, campy way, like Community or Arrested Development, where it's kind of poking fun, but overall has a consistent theme. No. It's bad writing. It's terrible writing. And sometimes there is really well done art. I mean, it is a blend of CGI and 2D, and it works very well sometimes, particularly with involuntary movements, like some of the rabbit's ears will bounce as their head moves, and it's a very cool little touch. Sometimes it is so horrendous that you swear you're looking at a student who could not render their animation properly because they began a project at 2 a.m. for an 8 a.m. due date. It is rough sometimes, and then sometimes it's beautiful. You're whiplash between good and bad. It's like, ah! And there is some very weird overtones. You see, let me get back to the message. I'm all scatterbrained. I'm everywhere. I have such strong opinions about it. Oh my gosh. I'm losing my mind. But the message, you see, Zootopia through and through understood that it was creating a metaphor for racial tension. And it knew that, which is why everything was consistent. The predator-prey dynamic showed that same tension. At the beginning, you are greeted with this is going to be adult, and this series is why this episode is going to be marked explicit, because I can't get around it. You can't get away from the naked bunny. Anyway, there is a rabbit for the female lead and a wolf for the male lead, and it follows the wolf. Primarily, the wolf really wants to eat meat because he's a carnivore. But the way he talks about wanting to eat this rabbit is very sexual and it's aggressive, and it is gross. But then at other times, in different episodes, it's not painted in a sexual light. It's painted in a true, this is just how carnivores are light. You see, in this society, carnivores have a black market where you can buy meat of cooked animals. I'll get back to that in a second. You see, at the beginning of the show, it opens with a carnivore killing and eating a student at the school that is a lamb. And it paints the show, you see, it's painted like it is a murder mystery. Students trying to figure out who killed this lamb. Well, it's painted that way for 5 minutes. And then they just forget all about it because they want to show a naked bunny. And it's just frustrating because there are times when you could have a compelling story, and I'll even say it, a compelling story of either dimension. Either the carnivore wants to eat this rabbit, and it's a metaphor for a predatory sexual climate, and it is a young man struggling with how to handle his sexual nature. That could be a compelling story. You could do a lot with that, and the metaphor works. Or, on the other end of the spectrum, it is genuine. Carnivores need to eat to survive. And this is like a vampire kind of story where it's viewed as an addiction rather than a perversion. And he struggles against that like one would struggle with drinking or anger and can't escape what he is inside, so he has to learn to cope with it. That's also a compelling story. But the show tries to straddle these two ideas by having this sexualized view of violence while also treating the violence like it is an addiction and something that you wrestle with. It is done so poorly that you end up finding yourself with whiplash by the end of this series, because it begins with the sexual overtones of Eyes Wide Shut, where it's just in your face. And it ends with a mob shootout for a reason. And the violence is viewed as just violence. It's not viewed in a sexual light. And you don't really know what to make of it. As an audience member, you can't really understand what the moral of this story is. But I guess now that I think about it, maybe that is the moral, that animals are just terrible and will kill each other for no reason, even if they're high school students. And that brings me to another point that I would like to talk about, and that is they are very upfront with the ages of these students. From what I talked to you about earlier, you might be thinking that these are college students or maybe those weird 30-year-old, how-do-you-do-fellow-kids fake high school students. No. They are blatantly 14 and 15-year-olds partaking in these adult activities. Boy, is that uncomfortable to watch, because you don't want to see that. You don't want to think about that. But they live at their school, which I guess is a different cultural thing that we're not used to, but it's real easy to get all this confused. There are times when the show strays into buddy comedy territory, where you think this will be kind of funny, a little awkward, and you think that's the tone. There is only one character where the artist decided to have fun. You see, there is a cold open of one episode that involves a chicken, yes, a chicken, in class, and she notices that our usual protagonist, Wolf, is eating an egg sandwich, or egg salad sandwich. Let me correct myself. Egg salad sandwich. And this chicken loves that he's eating it. And she gets very proud when he talks about how good it is. You see, she lays eggs for that egg salad sandwich that the school sells. And the day that she lays them are the most popular day that the students take. She is able to lay the best tasting eggs. She views this as a pride for her species, that she is able to lay delicious eggs. She has a strict, rigorous workout routine that she follows to a T, so she can lay such tasty eggs. It was hilarious. It was a treat to see artists understand that they're working with anthropomorphized animals, and they could kind of apply some fun here, and they could enjoy it. That was the only time in the entire series that I had any fun. It is a dull slog of a show. It is, ugh. I mean, it's so teenage angsty. I don't know if I'm really a monster. I don't know if I like this girl. It's dull. And I think that comes from a fatal understanding of the source material. I mentioned that the source material was different and handled it better. That's because it had a consistent message on the predator-prey relationship. It viewed it more as a violent tendency and addiction rather than some kind of perverse sex violence thing. The wolf's dark demeanor and desire to eat was personified as this ghost that he would see and talk to. This ghost, or dark hulk, is what it would call him, because I think the country that it was written in didn't really have a better descriptor other than the Marvel superhero named Hulk. But rather, this dark passenger, I will apply the Dexter lingo, would tell him that he needs to kill and eat this rabbit. Well, the wolf would say, no, I like this rabbit. She's a friend of mine, and I might have feelings for her. And by having that separate character in the audience's mind, a separate character, be evil, we're able to root for this wolf. We're able to be in his shoes and understand there are parts of ourselves that we would rather not have. Maybe they're dark. We would rather keep them secret and suppressed, no matter how much they are a part of us. Well, by removing that dark passenger and instead just having the wolf straddle both characteristics, being a good guy and a bad guy, you're left with a passive, reactionary character who doesn't even want to wake up to be in his own show. So what are we supposed to feel as the audience? If the main character doesn't even want to be here, why would I want to be here? And then you get into his inconsistent morality, where he's struggling with not wanting to eat meat, but then he's okay with killing by the end of the show to protect the bunny. And I understand, because she gets kidnapped by the mob. That's the mob shootout. I don't know. Spoiler alert. I wouldn't watch it, so I don't care if I spoil it. The bunny gets kidnapped by the mob because the mob is lions, and the lions want to eat a bunny. There. I spoiled that earth-shattering detail. So the wolf shows up to protect her, to defend her. Well, he's ready to straight up kill these lions, but not as a defense or because he knows he has to. There was no moral climb to get to this point. You see, he had received help from a bunch of characters. He had friends, he had authority figures, he even had this one panda who would train him to not want meat anymore. He told all of them no. He was so angsty that he thought he could just handle it by ignoring it or whatever. And he's just passive. And it's just not fun to watch a show that sometimes looks good, sometimes doesn't. A show with inconsistent values and morals be driven by a passive character that's wishy-washy. At least the rabbit was the rabbit through and through. She was a rabbit that took her clothes off a bunch. Which, believe me, I did not want to watch, but it happened, okay? Couldn't avoid it. Goodness gracious. I would say that this show is a must-skip. And there are a lot of people that are real artistic that have reviewed this show with amazing reviews, and they say it is phenomenal because of the animation. If you want to see the animation, just Google the show and look at the images, and you'll get the stills. I wouldn't watch it. I gotta do the good, bad, and ugly because I'm running long in this episode. The good, some of the animation, the chicken cold open, and there is a Labrador dog that is good friends with the wolf, and he's a treat. Every scene with him, he's great. Whenever he shows up, I would say to my wife, "Oh, he's a good boy," and it was fun. He's a lab, so you know what? A lab gets an A+ just for being a lab. The bad, Everything else that I did not mention in the good made that show bad. Everything from the characters, to the writing, to the production, to the distribution, I don't care. And you know what? The audience, all of us are the bad. I'm bad because I contributed to this mess. I'm the bad of this show because I watched it. Ugh. And the ugly. Everything sexual. Every single scene that was sexual, because there were several sex scenes in this show between 14-year-old animals. Ugh, my goodness, it was uncomfortable. And thumbs down. Absolutely. Thumbs down. No go for me. That is a must skip. Now stick around after this second ad break, and I have a good list for you here on In My Own Words. Welcome back to this historic third segment here at In My Own Words. I don't want to make this a habit because your time is valuable. And if you're listening to me all day, well, you're not going to be doing anything yourself. You can't watch the movies I talk about. And that would be a shame. So I'm going to try and keep this as brief as possible, but you see, I didn't really have any other way to get all this information out. Three tiny little episodes? Ugh, like crumbs everywhere. There's nothing worse than having crumbs in a place that you don't want them. So I'm here with one big sandwich of content. And for the final slice of bread on this content sandwich, I have gotten some help. That's right, I really did phone it in. I asked for permission, so it's okay, but I'm getting a list generated by a fellow podcast aficionado named Will Malone. You can find him, well, most easily on this same app you're listening to me from. Just go to the search bar, look up Out of Focus. But he gave me permission to talk about this list he made, which I believe is of extreme importance. You see, he titled this blog Movies for the End of the World. This was written at the end of March and the first week of May, around there. Who cares? Time is a construct and we're all just swirling around in that toilet bowl. Well, he begins with a segment, Something Old. See, I'm going to go through, list these movies. You could watch them, maybe get a little bit of nostalgia. I'll give some opinion on them, and then we'll move on and say see you later. Till next time. How about that? Something Old. Let's see what he has here. We're starting off with Rear Window. You see, that's a Johnny Depp, Stephen King flick in which a writer, well, he kind of goes crazy. You know, Stephen King. I told you Stephen King and the main character is a writer. You can probably figure out the rest. I liked Rear Window when I first watched it. When I saw it for the third time, I liked it a lot less. And that's, maybe that's me, but maybe it's also that it's Johnny Depp and he doesn't act like all weird. This was pre-Pirates of the Caribbean Johnny Depp. So he actually is acting. And that's good to see. But I don't know. He's a stronger character actor than he is a real actor. Does that mean? That's a little mean. Let's move on. Mission Impossible, the original, the OG with Tom Cruise. This movie, in my opinion, is one of the best entertainment movies ever made. There is very little that's not fun in Mission Impossible. Tom Cruise is at his best in this movie. And the rest of the cast, you've got some of the best names. You got other people that I don't remember. I'm not going to look up because it's way too late now. We've all seen it. Mission Impossible is a lot of fun. It has some classic scenes that have been parodied to death, but it was original in its time. And it was a lot of fun. And I know original is a weird thing to say about a movie based on a TV show. But really, it is a very fun movie. You watch it and you can't help but cheer and laugh and go along with it. Even the sketchy 1990s, early 2000s CGI, even that doesn't deter from the movie. And I would give that movie a big, in my own words, thumbs up. Casino Royale. Ooh, classic. And I'm not talking about the 1960s parody. I am talking about the original Daniel Craig Bond movie. With No Time to Die just around the corner and possibly a James Bond countdown special, there's no better time to watch it. Casino Royale is a fantastic reimagining of the James Bond franchise. It gives everything that some of the 70s and 60s Bonds lacked. James Bond was a great international man of mystery, and he was suave and smart and was never the best hand-to-hand fighter. I'm not throwing shade at Sean Connery. I wouldn't one of his... Well, I'm a man, so he wouldn't hit me. But I... But seriously, it wasn't the best combat, and it was very staged, not really fluid, and a lot of dialogue. The villains were the best part of James Bond, and the Daniel Craig franchise never skimped on the villain. I believe it peaked at Skyfall, but there's something special about Casino Royale. It was made at a time when cinema was kind of, I guess, on the, this would be the middle of the front end of all of their remakes, but it came right when people were most excited about a remake. You had some really good ones that really updated these old ideas, and this really, really updated Bond, and it was a lot of fun to watch because it leans on the quipping and the action and the stunts, and it doesn't lose all of the other details that really make Bond great. And you'd never have that weird jumping of the shark. You know what I'm talking about, those weird Bonds where he's like got a hovercraft and maybe he's fighting mutants on the moon. You know what I'm talking about. We don't have to visit those. But he still has that suave, confident, fast-driving, beautiful women-loving, tuxedo-wearing, smoking and drinking, you know, all the vices. Everything is still there, but it is done with such technical and artistic skill that it makes for an updated, modern, and enjoyable watch. Now, I've talked about Bond enough. I can't help it. I like James Bond. The Big Lebowski. Classic. The Big Lebowski, when I first watched it, I did my best to keep up with all of the weird things. It's the only way to talk about it and try to make sense of the story. But that's the point of the movie, is that, yeah, you could make sense of it, but it doesn't really matter. It's just chaos. And the humor comes from the fact that all of that chaos, all of the weirdness, was because one guy liked his rug. And it's hilarious. And I gotta be honest, no one else in the world could play that role better than Jeff Bridges. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Ooh, what an interesting pick he has. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Last Crusade, I enjoyed, I would say, controversial opinion, more than Raiders of the Lost Ark. You see, Raiders was new. It was the first Indiana Jones, whereas Last Crusade intended, when it was made, was going to be the last Indiana Jones movie. And I am okay with saying that it was. We can ignore Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Last Crusade had all of the aspects of Indiana Jones that you like just turned up to 10. And then Sean Connery was there as his dad. It jumped the shark, I guess, a little bit in a few scenes. But let me tell you, when you get to the final 30 minutes where he is in that temple that I don't remember, looking for the Holy Grail. Oh my gosh. And he has to go through those mazes. Oh man, it's awesome. It's awesome. I won't spoil it, but it's awesome. He now has another section, something new. And these are newer contributions to the cinema selection of Netflix. Oh my gosh, the times are terrible. Parasite. I'm gonna do an episode on Parasite. You wait. You just wait. You sit there, you wait. I'm doing an episode on Parasite. So I'm gonna skip over his review of Parasite. That's da 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 da. 1917. Listen to my episode on 1917. Boy, this is easy. We're just going to knock these out. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Ha! Listen to that episode. Man, we have great taste in movies. Knives Out. I wanted to see this, but I did not. Because I was busy. Come on, get off my back. Watch Daniel Craig solve a mystery with a weird Cajun accent. Captain America also plays an arrogant jackass. Fun playing against type all around. That does sound like fun. Thanks, Will. Marriage Story. I have a thought about Marriage Story, and I'm going to get into it real quick here, real quick. Just bear with me, real quick. That movie now is so tone deaf because, let me tell you, the plot of that movie, a lot of people like it. And I think Will liked it. Will did. Yeah, okay. A lot of people liked it, but I did not. Okay? And this is my show. So you're going to listen to this. It is a movie about two actors that want to move across the country for their acting career. So they have to leave their child. So they have to break up their marriage. Yeah, that's a great message for the year 2020, in which we are all losing our jobs, being forced to stay inside, and actors have nothing better to do than sit around singing Imagine on Instagram. So, you know what? Yeah. Take that, Marriage Story. I don't like you. You know what? And Scarlett Johansson, you're a pretty good actor, but if you try to defend that movie, I will fight you. Okay? I'm upset about that movie because I don't like that it even got recognized at the Oscars. All right, let's move on before I pop a cork. Ford versus Ferrari. Will writes, are you a dad? Are you a dad that always watches the same movies over and over about dudes doing dude things? What about dudes being American and doing American cool guy things? Well, this is the movie for you. You know what? I couldn't have sold it better myself. It's a car movie. And you'd be a fool not to watch a car movie. The John Wick trilogy. Oh, well, great choice. Great choice. I love these movies. Will writes, man, being trapped inside for days and weeks on end sure makes you want to mow down Russians in a dramatically lit bathhouse, am I right? Well, you shouldn't do that, but you can watch Keanu Reeves do it, which I assure it'll be a lot safer and cooler than you doing that. Thanks, Will. That's great advice. I'm gonna follow it. Then he has his third and final section, Something Borrowed. This will just be bizarre recommendations. I guess this would be the good and the bad, the ugly, the weird part of this. I can somehow relate to this. I'm somehow connected. This is somehow my work also. I can somehow take credit for this. Thanks, Will. All right. Deep Blue Sea. You know, Deep Blue Sea. Will writes, this is certainly one of the better shark movies that not only star, but have a theme song written by LL Cool J. So don't miss this one. You know what? I like Deep Blue Sea. That movie is hilarious, and it's going into my Cinebad special. I'm going to mention it later. So put a pin on that board that I tell you to, just right up there. I'll bring it back down and talk about that later. I like Deep Blue Sea. That movie is a goofball of a movie, but I love it. Captain America, the First Avenger. Will writes that he watched this on Disney Plus the other day, and this movie is still really great. Actually, it could be argued that the Captain America movies have the most consistent high quality of all of the Avenger movies, and I'll agree with you there, Will. That brings you to an important point. You see, the people that made the Captain America movies also made the final two Avengers movies, which is why it seems that the quality of those two far surpassed that of the first two. Not to say that Joss Whedon can't direct a good movie, but Joss Whedon has not released a good movie in a long time. I don't know if he's lost his touch. I don't know if he doesn't understand the times or the audience. I don't know if after Firefly died, part of him died, but it's sad. And we should all mourn that Firefly is gone. That's the moral. And finally, a movie that I like. Will shares his thoughts on A Star is Born. And I like that. I like A Star is Born. Let's see what Will said. As I've stated before, I'm in love with the Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga version of this film, and it's a total emotional gut punch. If you want to feel sad from something other than a virus, then I guess this one will do that for you. He's right. This movie's a gut punch. Boy, is it a gut punch. It is done with such skill and tact and subtlety in both actors' performances that it can bring you into their world, and they keep you there, and then they beat you up, and then they send you out an emotional wreck. Fantastic movie that unfortunately has a major plot hole. I don't think I'm going to talk about this movie because really, if you've seen it, you've gotten all there is from it. So I'll go ahead and tell you. A major part of Bradley Cooper's character is that he didn't like to wear hearing protection or the headphones during the performance because he couldn't hear the crowd. That's a common problem. And I learned when working on a soundboard for a band that they wear earpieces and there are room mics that pick up the audience so that the band members and the singers can feel like they're in the room and not feel isolated. Knowing that that exists pokes a major hole in that movie, but I'm willing to let it slide because both Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga were phenomenal, and Sam Elliott's performance even was amazing, so I'm letting it slide. That is awesome. Awesome movie. It gets the, in my own words, thumbs up. So way to go. Way to go. And I'd like to end with reminding everyone that times are tough. Times can be tough. And I hope that you were able to sort of detach yourself and engross yourself in something silly. Cartoons, Netflix, me talking about a list of movies that maybe I wrote, maybe I didn't. I didn't. But maybe this distraction can help you come back to earth, not be so tense like I was talking about early on, and give you a little bit of perspective that though it feels like the world's ending, and this is it, the world is not ending. There will be a tomorrow. There will be more movies. There will be more TV. And most importantly, there will be more, in my own words. And that'll do it for us today. Be sure, check out Will Malone. Thank you, Will. Big help today. Really, you filled a lot of content. Thank you. Check out Will Malone. You can check out his Instagram at WILLMALONE. He's a photographer. So if you're in the upstate of South Carolina and you need some pictures taken, I would suggest him. He helped me out. I'd like to help him out. Be sure to look him up. Photographers are hurting right now, so give him a shout out. He probably would take some pretty good pictures. If you look at his Instagram, you can tell he takes good pictures. But I don't want to put words in your mouth, except that he's a great photographer. Check out his blog. It's willmalone.com/blog. Check out his podcast. Be sure to check that out. It is Out of Focus. He talks with local artists, local artisans, local business owners. He talks about movies. He talks about photography. He talks about business ownership. He talks about branding. Really, he talks a lot about a lot of things, and he's a lot more diverse than I am. So if you're not feeling entertainment, check him out. Give him a good listen. His episodes aren't hours long like mine are, so they're great if you have a quick little drive and you want to get a podcast in. So I'd look him up. And again, thank you, Will. Make sure to subscribe to In My Own Words, because if you subscribe, guess what? You might become a millionaire. Maybe. I don't know if you will, but you might. So why would you want to risk it right now? Of all times, I'd definitely hit that subscribe button. It's possible. So be sure to subscribe to In My Own Words. We'll notify you when we have more content. Make sure to like us on Instagram and Facebook. Facebook, we are In My Own Words. On Instagram, we are at In My Own Words Official. We are available on every podcasting platform. That is iTunes, Spotify, I don't know, Google Play, if anyone still goes there. It doesn't matter. We're there. Be sure to check us out everywhere you can, and make sure to hashtag spread the word. Let's get this audience growing. And I will see you next time. Have a good week. Oh, and stay safe.